The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
Thought Crime Radio. My name is Rich, and on this show we have the temerity to question authority and call attention to the many naked would-be emperors in this world. Janelle's not here this week. She's here in spirit, though, and I will attempt to channel her. And so for the past 7 months, we've been hammering away at the authorities who presume to second-guess human nature and design, specifically with regard to the physiology and process of human birth, the American Obstetrical Cartel. The story is frankly incredible and accounts for why the home birth movement is gaining momentum despite all the propaganda and legal obstacles that ACOG, the American Obstetrical Lobby Group, has put in its way. As I think we've pretty well established these past months, American Obstetrics has managed to create a situation where the vast majority of Americans currently alive have been imprinted and essentially brainwashed under conditions of severe stress and pain while being intoxicated with sedatives and hallucinogens, subjected to varying degrees of asphyxia and deprived of significant quantities of blood, as well as their mother's breast and loving embrace as they are clamped, suctioned, scrubbed raw, wrapped tightly in a towel/straitjacket, and whisked off to sensory deprivation chambers to cry their eyes out at a time when their brains are literally exploding with new neural connections and meaning. And then there's circumcision for the boys. Around 75% of the native-born males in this country have been essentially sexually tortured and emotionally lobotomized through the hazing ritual of medicalized circumcision, a quack remedy for a vast spectrum of medical boogeymen ranging from masturbatory insanity to, surprise, lack of respect for authority figures. Circumcision just happens to involve the amputation of the ridged frenar band, the primary erogenous pleasure-sensing zone of the male body. And as we've explained on a previous show, the most recent justification for circumcision, HIV prevention, is as much of a hoax as all the ones that have gone before. The media's subservience to the medical cartel in this issue is certainly comparable to its treatment of the Bush administration's propaganda in the lead-up to the Iraq War. No one seems to be minding the shop here. So those are just the provable, or at least strongly supported, facts, as you can see for yourself if you explore the links on our website at thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com, where you'll also find a short introduction into the corruption and cover-up of harm in the vaccination industry. Interestingly, both obstetrical abuse and circumcision have the effect of disempowering women. Obstetrical abuse interferes with the hormonal and physiological processes which would normally prep babies for instant bonding to their mothers and replaces the hormones of love and pleasure with those of stress and pain. With the added element of imprinting, one can see how the resultant mother-baby alienation could be projected onto women in general in the baby's later life. Likewise, breastfeeding is a bonding experience for the baby, which can only suffer from the formula marketing which routinely occurs in American obstetrical wards. Regarding circumcision, amputation of erogenous tissue serves to lobotomize men's pleasure centers, interfering with the emotional, spiritual bonding normally experienced by men during sex. All this targeted trauma and abuse certainly raises interesting questions about obstetrical medicine as an instrument of social control and as a foundation of patriarchy. It seems medicine has taken on social functions which were formerly assigned to religion. On today's show, we want to get into how all this preverbal abuse manages to replicate itself through the generations and across cultural boundaries, and its possible role in maintaining and spreading the ideology of fear and domination which has come to infect much of the world. On the phone, we again have last week's guest, Elena Tonetti, producer of the film Birth as We Know It, birthasweknowit.com, a groundbreaking exploration of the true nature of birth as a vehicle of love and grace, as well as babies. Elena has just returned from a tour of Asia where she conducted workshops on empowering women to trust the innate intelligence of their bodies and their capacity to bring forth a better future for us all. And if I did this properly, Elena, are you there? Elena, are you there? Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, good. I didn't lose you.
No. Hi. It's a pleasure to be talking with you again.
I don't know if you managed to hear what I was saying here. I don't know if that was if the phone was configured to pass that on to you or not.
Partially.
Okay. So I understand you just returned from a tour of Asia.
Yep.
And some of the stories you've already relayed to me sound pretty horrific. I was wondering if you could get into some of your discoveries in, for instance, Cambodia and India. And what do you think about the possible role of birth as an instrument of social control?
Oh, boy. That's a very, very big subject. In my understanding, birth was never just about birth. It was understood pretty early in the life of our race, in the life of our humankind, that the way we treat infants and babies of mammals would affect the way they perceive the norm, whatever it is, the social norm. And the way, for example, baby elephants and horses and camels are raised to be working for humans, it was harvested, in a way, for thousands of years by people. The next step is to make an assumption that whoever understood that dynamic knew that humans have the same mechanism. It actually has a fancy name. It's called limbic imprint. The limbic imprint is something that happens within our nervous system during our formative period, from the moment of conception throughout the 9 months of gestation, then during the birth, the actual manner with which we arrive into our world, And then the first few years after the birth, this is all called formative period. So our feelings and experiences during our formative period create a sort of basic settings in our mind, in our brain, in our heart, in our physiology. So we understand whatever happened to us as, quote-unquote, the way we survived, the way we came into existence. That mechanism is actually nature's assurance that the young of the species knows how to behave. The little bird would know how to fly, the cat knows how to wash itself, because in mammalian world, they cannot use words to teach their young to do certain things and not do the other things, to eat certain foods and not to eat others. So the young of the species absorbs the behavioral of the adults just by being in the field and by observing, and the programming happens non-cognitively. In other words, it happens in the other parts of the brain other than cortex. That's why they are not rational, not logical. They cannot be talked out of it. You know what I mean? If our nervous system has basic settings on pain and suffering, then pain and suffering would be our comfort zone, in spite of rationalizing that we don't want it. The nervous system would be seeking that kind of experiences to sort of bring us back into sense of feeling alive. Did you understand?
Yes, I think so. So basically, this sounds like it would have to be a combination of both sort of fear and pain combined with love, sort of a.
Right. Well, the thing is that all mammals are wired to interpret whatever happens as the right thing. There is no judgment, because the judgment and censorship, it comes later when the cortex develops. But at this point, for example, goslings, when they hatch out of the egg, they will automatically follow the first thing that they see, and it's supposed to be the mother. But if it will be the fox, for example, leading them into her den to be eaten, they would follow the fox. Or if it would be a scientist moving a pencil in front of them, they would follow the pencil. It's that automatic.
Do you have any knowledge of any written record of the conscious use of birth imprinting as an instrument of social control in old?
No. Okay. No, just seeing the watching the birth practices around the world. That's my research field.
So you figure all these different cultures have stumbled on the secret of this independently, probably.
I see. Like going into something way over my head, I don't know if they could stumble independently. I think that it, first of all, happened thousands of years ago, way before traditions were even formed, and just by looking. Human history. No other species kills their own, except humans.
Is this
somehow there had to be a mechanism of making humans want to kill each other, because it's not a neurobiology. It's not in our original design of our relationship with the source, because it's very, very, interesting the way we come into being. It's not only our mammalian nature that comes to being. We also have very developed cortex and neocortex. So we have what many religions refer to as a soul and a spirit, which is a completely different layer of our being. So we're not just our limbic imprints, even though we have that basic programming. There is something that comes into play that allows us to come to existence in the first place.
So theoretically, the conscious mind can override or reprogram this limbic imprint.
Yes, provided, and that's what we're all about, yeah. That we can actually consciously switch all the negative settings that allow us to perceive the world and ourselves as a source of misery. Well, that's basically what it comes down to. If we look to the Eastern religion, it just says that we don't even exist, you know, that it's all an illusion, that you need to get out of the body in order to experience nirvana, that in the body it's just a big mistake and some kind of, fluke of perception. The Western religion is telling us that, again, that we have to die in order to experience something good, in order to deserve going to paradise, to heaven. We need to behave just so. Yeah. But also, they are basically providing just ways of coping with the degree of misery. They're not providing a way of healing that which I called the original sin, the limbic imprint.
More interestingly, they also, both approaches tend to foster passivity in the face of social dysfunction.
Yeah, passivity and justification of suffering and lack of creative approach to finding solutions to the degree of misery we're in.
So when you talk about conscious birth and loving birthing imprint, you're really talking about something profoundly revolutionary in terms of social relations.
Yep.
And
yep. My plan is, are you familiar with the concept of 100th monkey effect?
Sounds familiar. Could you explain it?
Oh, it was a very interesting observation on one of the islands where scientists were working with monkeys. They noticed that because they were closely observing the behaviors, they noticed at some point that one young monkey started washing her roots, the type of roots that they were eating that looks like potato. And they noticed that this one monkey started washing her potatoes. And pretty soon the other young monkeys started washing their potatoes. And pretty soon the older monkeys started washing their potatoes, until the whole tribe just adopted this new practice that they were washing in the creek. They would go and wash that potato, then eat it clean. So at the time when the amount of monkeys washing their potatoes reached about 100, all of a sudden, all of the same kind monkeys on all the neighboring islands started washing their potatoes too.
Even though there was no physical contact between the islands?
No, they had no computer access. Had no telephones to tell other monkeys to do that.
So there was no immigration, no swimming or anything like that going on?
No. Uh-huh. No. And this phenomenon is now called as a 100th monkey effect. There was a certain critical mass in that species that tipped the behavioral modules in that direction. And I think what we need is to create that critical mass of traumatized babies among us.
You're cracking up a little bit. Did you say non-traumatized babies?
Yeah, I was saying that we need to create a critical mass of new babies that are coming in now that are not traumatized the way we were. And then they will grow up. Within 15, 20 years, they will come into their power because many of them are now here. We have thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of non-traumatized babies born already in the last 10, 15 years.
How widespread is this in Russia, where you came from?
Well, it used to be much better, but 2 years ago, home birth was banned.
My God.
Yeah, a couple of midwives are in jail.
Oh, my God. This is like the witch hunts of medieval times, don't you think? I mean,
yeah.
Doesn't it serve a similar social function? It neuters women.
Exactly.
Severs them from their social ties that would empower them.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I was saying is that if we would have a critical mass of people that are not programmed on pain and suffering, that's all we need. We're basically one generation away from heaven and earth because those kids will grow up and clean up the mess because we cannot convince George Bush or Osama bin Laden. We cannot convince them to realize what they're doing and stop doing it. We can only offer the solution of making new people that are not going to play that game.
Yeah. That.
And in the meantime, those who are running the show now, they will retire and leave the stage. So that's my plan.
Of course, they're fighting back. Russia isn't the only place that has outlawed home birth. Australia has, it's my understanding.
Yeah, many, many countries. In America, it's almost extinct now, too.
Yeah, this is crazy. I mean, we thought we were conscious, hippies in the 60s, the natural movement towards, peace and community. But this is a blind spot that most people have overlooked completely.
Well, I think it's some kind of very deliberately kept as a blind spot. You know, a young woman, by the time she is giving birth for the first time, is exposed on average to about 130 terrible scenes of birth in the movies, in the shows, in ER, in many ways, especially in high school. The high school sex ed class shows the bloodiest, scariest kind of birth for the young seventh grade girls that they actually run out to the bathroom to puke after watching what that kind of birth.
My God, this is propaganda. This is indoctrination.
Yeah.
This is amazing. So, I mean, we're really getting at the dark underbelly of the beast here, aren't we? This is long overdue to expose this to the light of day.
Yeah, please. Anybody out there who is hearing me, see what you can do. Maybe you can go to your local junior high school and offer them to replace the terrible, terrible, devastating, bloodiest, screaming, oh my God, it's just most terrible birth that they could find, and ask them to replace that with a beautiful birth, the footage of some really, really amazing, amazing way that people can enter into this world. I actually did talk to a few junior highs, and the teachers were telling me the same thing across the nation, that they would love to change and show a good birth, but nobody would take responsibility. They would lose their job. They're prescribed to show the terrible birth as a measure of preventing sexual encounters.
Wow.
Among teenagers. And I was saying, well, sweetheart, that's counterproductive because that doesn't stop anybody from having sex. It just scares them from giving birth normally.
So these awful births, I assume they're hospital births, right? I mean, most
Yes, of course.
Yeah, most
of course they're hospital births, but they were specifically selected for school program. From that angle, they wanted to scare the girls.
Yeah, the listener needs to understand that birth is an autonomic process. It's something that happens without thinking. If you're scared, you know, if you're in a room with strangers coming in and out all the time and you know, poking and prodding you, and you're lying on your back with your legs in the air, this is not conducive to an easy birth by any means. And most of the complications that arise in hospital births are iatrogenic. They're caused by medicine.
Well, that's the thing. Just being in an unfamiliar environment and having, you know, needles being stuck into, that's also a very wise natural mechanism. When cervix locks, when there is a signal of adrenaline or any kind of stress hormone in the bloodstream, it makes the cervix lock because imagine that you are a deer giving birth in the bushes somewhere, and all of a sudden you feel the scent or of a predator or, you know, unfamiliar sound, and that very millisecond that the amino acids release in the bloodstream that form stress hormones, as soon as it reaches the bloodstream, which is like 0.3 seconds, the cervix locks. It becomes a very, very solid, rigid frame. So the deer can run for her life and not drop the baby. You know what I mean?
Wow. Yeah.
So if she is in that stressed state of being, then it would take, it's impossible, it becomes a solid, rigid frame. You would need a cold cutting metal object to open it.
But in your movie Birth as We Know It, you stress the importance of the lengthy preparation for a natural conscious birth. You know, the listener shouldn't assume that after years of conditioning about being scared about birth, as well as their own birth imprint, which is in all likelihood unexplored and lying latent in their own neural network, it's unwise to necessarily assume you can just have a baby at home without without some kind of preparation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's because we're so deeply conditioned into it, we really need to look at very deep layers and not just do some psychotherapy, because talk therapy would address... Could you hear me?
You cut out there.
Yeah, the talk therapy would address the cortex. It would maybe explain what exactly is frightening and difficult and what are the obstacles are, but you cannot talk your way out of those obstacles because they were created on a different, in a different part of our being, in the feeling, sensing part of the brain,
so
not the thinking and calculating part of the brain.
So
and these two different parts of the brain are like two different countries. They are very disconnected from each other.
Janelle, my co-host, who is not here today, she practices something called cranial sacral therapy, which
mm-hmm.
She says is useful in dealing with these issues.
Yeah, absolutely. The craniosacral and even talk therapy. You know, you do need to understand what's there. It's just See, the craniosacral also is addressing only one part of the brain, reptilian brain. It's very important to find the technique that addresses all three areas of the brain at the same time: the physiology, the feelings, and the cortex, the thinking, talking part. So the most effective techniques are the ones that engage all of our different areas of the brain simultaneously. That's the key to the effectiveness. If we do them one at a time, that's what takes years.
Yeah.
And I see as a basic obstacle for giving birth gracefully is our own birth trauma.
So,
there is many others, of course, whatever trauma we received in the formative period, but it can also, the cause of our inability to just relax and surrender to the birthing field and open the body and the mind and the heart and let the baby out, it's the cause could be rape, for example. If a woman went through an experience of being raped, which is actually a catastrophic amount, a catastrophic percentage of women that it's hard to even talk about those things, because I just went to many countries, and every country I had the same question I asked every circle of women that I was collecting around myself. I would ask them the same question: please raise your hands, those of you who were raped before age 10. And usually about 80 to 90% of women would raise their hands. And the rest of them were just raped later.
Oh my God.
So in many countries of the world, it's not even considered something out of norm. It's part of the norm of social behavior. But it doesn't make it so for women. And that's the thing, that women are afraid to talk about it and even show that they're in pain. They're actually expected not to be showing that they're in pain.
All this is facilitated by the alienation of people from women. I mean, women's denigration in society.
Yeah, and it's not only this gender-specific kind of abuse when it's men abusing women. Women themselves are not treating each other very nice either. You know, I was hearing just stories after stories about the relationship within the frame of one family between women, how the mother-in-law would be treating her daughters-in-law. And for example, in India, I heard such an expression that if you are a wife of the youngest son, God help you. With that exact tone and amazing degree of just heart-wrenching degree of sadness in the voice of this woman.
Is this institutionalized in religion, or how is this perpetuated?
Tradition. Yeah, just traditionally, women are not treated nicely by their husbands, but then when they get married, it's the whole hierarchy of the family, the clan, the internal matriarchy that is even more cruel to a woman than the patriarchy itself.
So we're all colonized by this self-perpetuating socialization mechanism.
Yeah, but we don't even have to go far to the East to notice how poorly women treat women. Watch any movie about teenage girls. There would be a war going on between the popular girls and the nerdy girls. And sometimes those young girls act out just astonishing degree of brutality towards each other, to their own peers, neighbors, the classmates.
Every medium of communication in the world is passing on this poison to the new generations.
Yeah.
So you've gone to what, India, Cambodia?
I went to Australia, Thailand, Singapore, and a few places in India, and then I was in Malaysia. About Cambodia, I heard from a midwife that just came from Cambodia. We met in Thailand. She's a local Thailand midwife, and she just went there for a couple of months to work in some remote villages. And so I didn't go there myself, but she showed us 6 long slideshows, so I feel like I've been there. And it was fresh off her. She was still smelling of the fires that were burning there.
You mentioned that the Khmer Rouge had specifically targeted midwives during the
Pol Pot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, the government eradicated midwives from the villages in Cambodia, and the women that were just prescribed to go to the hospital. But the quality of life is not allowing them to pay for the hospital, even to know that they're supposed to pay in the hospital. Money is just not part of their everyday living. They still live like centuries ago. It's a barter system, and they don't even know about money.
Yeah, it sounds like they're worse off than they were centuries ago, because centuries ago they had midwives, right?
Right. So they are bound to, when they go into labor, they just get on a mule on this wagon with no tires. It's just wooden wheels, and they go on this dirt road for a couple hours to nearest place where there is a hospital. And then, of course, hospital will turn them away, and mostly they give birth on the way back to the village. And because child mortality and maternal mortality is so high, they have this really, really terrifying practice to scare the evil spirits away. They start burning fires underneath the hut, so the smoke will be enveloping the house 7 days. The husband's supposed to keep the fire going on for 7 days. And it's 2 degrees Celsius on average.
I'm sorry, how many degrees?
It's about 95 to 100 degrees, between 90 and 100 average.
And the woman and baby are supposed to stay inside.
And the woman and the baby is inside the hut, being scorched by that fire. The huts are on really tall stilts. They're very high from tsunamis and from floods and from insects. So underneath there is sort of an oven about the size of dining table with open fire on it. And many huts get burned. But even if they don't get to burn the whole hut, the women inside that are also wrapped in a lot of clothes, they're just getting a 24/7 sauna. But the worst part is that they put a big metal dagger to the baby inside the cloth that the baby is wrapped in to, again, scare away the evil spirits. And babies get blisters and burns from that dagger, from the heat.
Wow. So in the more theoretically advanced countries like Singapore and Australia, what did you find there about their obstetrical practices?
Well, Singapore, I was hosted by a hypnobirthing practitioner, Daya Bustamante, and she said that when she came to Singapore 15 years ago, it was about 15% rate of C-section. And these days, she said that she actually spent a fair amount of effort trying to find out statistics, what is it nowadays, and she couldn't find any numbers. But from talking with nurses, she was saying it's about 90 to 95%. Nurses that work in the hospitals are saying that it's very rare that a woman would go for natural birth.
And what is the effect on the baby's psychology of being delivered by surgery?
Well, there is a lot of information about, there is actually a huge body of research on the emotional and psychological side effects of all of the obstetrical interventions, not only C-section, but forceps and drugs that are being used and epidurals and all the procedures that you could possibly name. It's on birthpsychology.com. It's a very informative site. And the work of Dr. David Chamberlain, William Emerson, Ray Castellina, Thomas Bernie, they did all proper academic studies and published enormous amount of articles about this. So I would encourage listeners to go for it and see for themselves what's going on. The thing is that there was absolutely no safety trial on those procedures. You would think that when something is done on babies, wouldn't you want to check what happens to the baby? But no, there is absolutely no research about what possible side effects it could be, other than a few physiological tests. You know, all 10 fingers are still there, and that's good enough.
Yeah,
the thing is that most of the procedures have devastating emotional side effects of the baby, and that is being completely not researched in any in the medical field. They just choose to believe that the baby doesn't have any feelings and emotions, and actually that the baby is completely senseless. It is actually in writing in medical textbooks that the baby does not feel.
Yeah, people.
Even though the research that shows that the baby, on average, could be about 150 times more sensitive than adult, all this research is already 10 years old, and none of it made it into medical textbooks.
At least 10 years old. Yeah, I mean, some of it dates back to the 60s, and it's still. I mean, the
60s, but still in solid numbers in the appropriate academic format. All the studies that done absolutely up to code and expectation of the most demanding medical audience. Those kind of studies, they are 10 to 15 years old. And none of it is in the medical school. We have a lot of work to do.
We certainly do. This is just.
But the thing is, it's really a matter of whether we want to try to convince doctors and chase after them and try to convince them to listen, or we just educate the public. if we just explain to young girls now in schools that this is what birth is, this is how you can give birth, then no matter what doctors want to say, the women will demand being treated humanely and demand that their babies would be treated appropriately, respectfully, in some kind of dignified manner. At this point, babies are stripped of their human rights like they're not even people. Babies are not treated like people.
No, it's true. It's true. I mean, what adult would volunteer to be tied down and have pieces of their genitals cut off without anesthetic, you know? But this is a common practice in this country.
Yeah. I was talking to a mother, actually. She was going...
You cut off.
I was talking to one mother. She was going to circumcise her son. And she was very lighthearted about it, and she said, well, he'll be uncomfortable a little bit, but he'll get over it. And I said, what about if somebody would, without asking you, crucify you to a table and slowly, without anesthesia, cut off your clitoris? And she looked at me like I slapped her in the face and said, well, that's very different. And
but of
I
course
said, well,
it's not.
How is it different?
It is not different. It's physiologically,
no, it's,
you know, you can map the nerve endings and map them to the pleasure centers of the brain and see that it's very, you know, it's identical, essentially.
Well, yes, except with the difference that clitoris only has 8,000 nerve endings, and the foreskin has 20,000.
Yes, virtually the entire erogenous surface of the penis is in the foreskin.
Yeah.
So we're talking about
but
a total...
No, I'm talking that 20,000 nerve endings is in that piece of foreskin that they're cutting off.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And so...
Not the entire surface.
So when we talk about male genital mutilation, you know, this is an accurate term. We're talking about, in a female, it would be equivalent to... you know, an infibulation plus the excision of the G-spot.
Yep.
There's virtually nothing left.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people wonder why this country has high divorce rates. You know, women are talking, you know, saying that it's like they're not even there, and men are just using their bodies without actually being there, and, you know, it's not hard to figure out why.
Well, that's the whole thing, that without it, a man is basically blindfolded.
Right.
Some of the men develop other ways of making up for the missing body part, but most of the men don't even know that something is missing. They think that they came that way.
Right.
And for the healing to happen, we at least need to tell them that, I'm sorry, you were tortured as the first experience of being in the body, because it is the most exquisite torture that the body can possibly endure.
And it's followed by a lifetime of sensory deprivation. And sensory deprivation has known effects, you know, pleasure sensory deprivation has known effects on the ability to connect spiritually
yeah.
with other people.
Yeah.
So this is a recipe for mass social alienation and manipulation of large populations of people, because these people have no sense of community.
Well, that was the exact purpose of circumcision when it got started about 5,000 years ago in Africa. It was a way of branding the slaves and building an army.
This is getting pretty
and
overwhelming.
That's how in Egypt Jewish population who was enslaved was circumcised for that exact reason.
So they adopted this practice as a way of empowering themselves, but in fact they were sort of succumbing to their own enslavement.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot when people are saying, well, Jewish God demands that, and this is such a strange notion. It's like God did not speak to anybody in particular. It's just people are told that somebody is being told that somebody is being told that some other person was told by whatever. Whatever.
Yeah.
Who knows what that person was smoking? I don't know. There was a lot of psychedelics used in ancient.
I can't believe a decent psychedelic would trigger this kind of abuse.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I'm saying. That it probably wasn't even a decent psychedelic, because the decent one would not produce anything like that. I just think that it was a way. How do you make people do something that doesn't make any sense? You know, that which we can call God or whatever it is that created us, created that the body in the first place. Why would that energy of the source, the great creator, whatever word we use for it, Shiva or God or whatever language, why would it want to have it cut off? After going into trouble of creating it so exquisitely beautiful and perfect.
Yeah, this is an insult. I mean, if you believe in God, then it doesn't take much reflection to realize this is an insult to creation.
So. Yeah.
You know, I need.
There is actually a group is now forming. It's called Jewish Women Against Circumcision, that women dare to speak up and. Protest. They want to stay connected with their sons because the research is done undoubtedly showing that it alienates the baby boy from the mother.
Right. This is definitely a foundation of the patriarchy.
Yeah.
I believe that. You know, I need to take a quick break and read a couple of PSAs.
Okay.
If you could just hold on for a minute.
Okay.
On Tuesday, tomorrow, March 16th, Steve Spellman will discuss the upcoming $120 million Columbia school bond issue that is on the upcoming April 6th ballot, as well as other pressing education issues. What is the best way to accommodate growing student enrollment, but in a tight economic environment? Join Steve and guests Superintendent Dr. Chris Belcher and school board member Christine King as they discuss these and other local and national education issues, including President Obama's Race to the Top National Education Initiative. That's the Mid-Missouri Freedom Forum on Tuesday, March 16th at 5 p.m. on KOPN 89.5 in Columbia. And join in with the KOPN celebration of Women and Women's Month on March 28th between 12 and 7 p.m. This is an open mic event live and on the air. Women and the celebration of women's lives take over the airwaves. Bring a poem, a song, a tribute, or a story and help KOPN celebrate women during the Women's History Month on March 28th from noon until 7 p.m. or tune in all day midnight to midnight to hear KOPN's tribute to women. So, back to your travels in Asia. Can you relate to some of your... some of your other impressions of what's going on over there?
Well, across the border, across the globe, I see the same picture. Disempowered women. And a few of the women that are all of a sudden snapping off of that hypnosis and waking up and saying, I don't want this. I don't want this anymore.
This is a hypnosis.
I want something different for my children. I want something different for me. And they're just waking up and opening their eyes and raising their heads. And it's just amazing, amazing to watch that.
So you think this is the 100th monkey syndrome?
I think so.
Wow.
I think so.
That's
and
helpful.
I am working tirelessly on expediting this process, just zooming around the world.
It can't happen too soon.
Yeah. And My film is now in 56 countries, and that's how people are finding out about me and wanting me to come over to their country and teach the course. And I do the process that I call the limbic imprint recoding, and that's my way of healing the birth trauma, so we could give birth to ourselves or to our babies in a way that does not recapitulate our original birth trauma.
So we could really we could create a whole new human race in a single generation here, can't we?
And we're doing this already. Actually, I secretly believe that it's already happened. I actually think that we already have the critical mass. It's just this three-dimensional reality has a bit of inertia, so it will take a few years to actually catch up and manifest itself into visible results. But I actually think that the process is well on the way.
I don't know of any large-scale political movement to push this, but we definitely need something like that.
Well, that would definitely help.
The organized resistance, the obstetrical cartel is allied. You know, they're very powerful, and they have inroads into the legislative process that are, you know, way beyond anything that grassroots, natural birth movement could accomplish. So we really need to get organized here.
Yeah, but I think resistance is also sort of old ways. Instead of resisting and spending time and energy on that, we can just spend these resources on reaching out to young women and young people and educating them. And the doctors sooner or later comply with the demand.
Provided the law allows it. That's what I'm worried about, is that many of these places, the door, the legal avenues to natural birth are being closed off.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very big question, because the thing is, the condition modern women are now is not very favorable towards the home birth. That's the thing, that we can't say everyone should give birth at home now, because women don't trust themselves. On average, they don't even know that something can happen that they would stop being afraid of giving birth.
That birth could be an actual moment of ecstasy.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's mostly women who are requesting elective C-section.
This is amazing.
It's basically the trend that is generated by women requesting elective C-section.
But of course it originated with the takeover of birth by men, right?
Right, of course, but that's the condition we're dealing with. This is the situation in present day, that if we just say everybody should give birth at home, that would generate actually more stress and can create a lot of complications, because women literally don't know that they know how to give birth. And the whole notion that the birth is a normal act of elimination from the body, it's like we don't need a book to read to know how to go to the bathroom.
Well, it's the baby's entree, debut into